Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Time for some college football discussion, though, with Doug Matthews. He's presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, how are you?
Doing well.
That was Christmas.
It was good. Good seeing you all at the Titans game.
Yes. I turned around and Doug was in the booth. It was great to see you. Did you enjoy the game?
I did. I hadn't been in a couple of years. Nice to get up there. I try to go up once a year and see everybody in the press box. You know, a lot of the folks, a lot of the beat writers also do college football and other things. And but most of them are still there, by the way.
You're right. There's a lot that are still there covering the games.
Long time guys.
Your assessment of the early signing period for Tennessee, where would you like to start there? Because it was, by all accounts, a good week for Tennessee last week.
You know, no matter what school you are following, each school has certain needs that they want to cover. Now, once you get to a level like some of the top teams who have been there the last several years, then you have everything set. You know the players you're going to be losing, but you really just try to build, maintain, and if possible, get a little bit better. Difficult to get a little bit better for some of these guys. But Tennessee's in the mode now. It's going to take a year, maybe two, maybe more than that, to get exactly where I think Jeremy Pruitt wants this team. So, John, what you do is you start with the obvious needs that you have. And when I say obvious, I'm talking about to this coaching staff. That was clearly for this head coach because he talked about it a lot. One of the neat things about Jeremy Pruitt is he may not get real eloquent with it, but he's going to pretty much say what he's thinking and where the problems area are, where the plus areas are. Well, the offense and defensive lines were those two positions. Linebackers would be another, and then on defense, the secondary in particular, simply because that's five positions now. And Tennessee's been average at best back there. Four freshmen and a sophomore really played a lot of ball this year. So it was an area that really needed to be addressed. I think they addressed all of those areas with the exception of linebacker. And what is going to be needed in this the next signing period or early enrollment period, if some of them come in early, are going to be outside linebackers, inside linebackers, and probably some speed wide receivers. But they got all those other bases covered in the first one. And they're much, much bigger. Had Coach Fulmer on Big Orange Sunday talking about one of the things that he had mentioned to me as the season was progressing and seeing players come in, and, of course, he would meet them because families and all those things, was how much bigger they were. And he said, Doug, one thing I'm sure of is we're going to be bigger. And hopefully more physical.
Bigger than the current players or bigger than what he remembered recruits looking
at? Well, both, but he had some big football teams. But and he mentioned the point that, you know, the game has changed in that area, that you look at what Alabama's recruiting, you look at what Ohio State's recruiting, you look at what Clemson's recruiting in Georgia and others, but those are the ones that we see down here. They're bigger. They're 320, 330, 340-pound offensive linemen. They're bigger defensive linemen. They're bigger cornerbacks. That was one of the things that Coach Pruitt really was concerned about when he took the job, was the size, the height of the defensive backs. Because you're out there now, most every SEC team you're playing has got a couple of 6'2", 6'3", and in more cases a little bit taller guys, and you got to be more physical. So that's one of the reasons why he didn't sign some in-state players that were defensive back, didn't recruit them, because they – didn't fit that 6 foot to 6'1" to 6'2" to 6'3" mold. I doubt that you see him recruiting many defensive backs that are under 6 foot, and probably not many under 6'1". If he does, it's because they are a special player. You don't ever turn down a special player.
And that goes to what I said for months now. You can tell that Pruitt has a defined formula for every position, right? He's got the specs. He knows what he wants in that type of player. The silhouette, if you will. And just because a guy is a 4 or 5 star is not going to trump the overall athleticism that he's looking for at a certain position, or the height requirements, or different qualities that he needs to play a certain system. There is a defined player for each position in Pruitt's offense and defense. And I think fans should appreciate that, because while Butch Jones, and I'm using him as the latest example, I could not tell you what a Butch Jones player is, because wide receiver, there's so many different types of receivers he would recruit, different heights and weights of an offensive lineman or a defensive back. With Pruitt, I think there's a more defined role for that type of player.
Well, there's no doubt about that. If you've ever listened or studied or heard, I watched the two Bills last night on a 30-for-30. It really was, but it goes back, if you've really studied Bill Parcells, who is the person that really Belichick learned under and then expanded, and then Saban learned under Belichick and then expanded. They have these set parameters on size that they're gonna recruit, and they're not gonna go underneath that. One thing that I heard Bill Parcells say one time: his left tackle is gonna be 6'5" and gonna be 300 pounds. And they said, so, and of course that's drafting. They asked him, so you won't draft anybody smaller than that? He said, oh, I might draft somebody smaller than that, but they're gonna move inside.
Yeah,
they're not gonna play tackle. And that's what you see here. And that's the one thing that the Tennessee fans should feel good about. This guy's recruiting to the specs that he wants. This is gonna be a bigger, more physical football team. I think it'll get that way rather quickly. They have some physical players up there. I think they have some that didn't play quite as physical as they will next year. So I don't see this program anywhere near as down as many people do. Now, I don't mean I'm right, but I see players up there that know that have learned the system, are going to get stronger, are going to get better at the fundamental part of it, and being able to play technique better, and then just being better and being coached a little bit better.
Doug, let me get your take on this, because everyone is looking for those little small glimpses of hope or positives. Every recruiting class, you can find them, right? There's every coach is going to like every player he signs, and every fan will buy into what the coach is saying. And that's fair, because that happens across college football. It's the lifeblood of a program. But looking beneath the layer, beneath the surface a bit of last week only, should I look at it as a positive that you have a player like Eric Gray and Corvarris Crouch, who were not committed to the program at this time last week, that ultimately sign with the team last week?
Well, I don't think Crouch has signed yet. I think he has committed. I don't believe he signed.
Made his announcement before the January deal where he...
Right. Now, he's probably, we're going to get into it in just a second. Just because you haven't signed a national letter doesn't mean you still can't come in and come in early,
right,
and be a scholarship. You don't even have to sign a national letter. All a national letter does is protect the school. The scholarship is what protects the player. You can sign a national letter and never be on scholarship. That's always important to remember. Yeah, I think so. You know, he identified, there's no question, I'm talking about Coach Pruitt, neither he nor his staff have had many conversations with him about this. Neither he nor his staff has really ever recruited Tennessee. Now, they've come in to recruit a player or two. They knew Memphis better than anything. And if you look now, one of the key things that I see that they've done, the last 2 years, they've got two really quality, we think the two they're getting this year's quality players, an offensive lineman named McBride, and then the Gray youngster.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they got two quality players. Tennessee's really never, you can go back and count probably the number of really quality players Tennessee's had in the last 20 years on one hand. I mean, I can't think, there's a few, but I can't think of many. So that's improved. But the area that he knows, that, you know, all of his people that he brought in, they knew Georgia, they knew Alabama, they knew Florida, they knew, you know, maybe South Carolina, because that's where they all recruited. That's where they all went to school. That's where they all were from, primarily. So he didn't really know, and when I say no, he had never really recruited the Middle Tennessee or East Tennessee area. So I think you're going to see that expand a little bit. He wanted, one of the things that he insisted was before he offered a scholarship, this was anywhere, but it certainly covered Middle Tennessee, that you were going to have to come up there, sit down with him, work out if you could legally, you know, camps, things like that, before he offered you a scholarship. There were a couple of young men here that I know well, don't know them, but know their family well, that weren't offered a scholarship, that a little miffed about it, that already had them from Ohio State and Clemson and other places. But that's the way he does it. I think now that he's been here, he'll get those players up there more now because he knows the coaches, he knows the head coaches. And, you know, some of these guys, Juana Morris is a great example. They got Juana Morris because he and a couple of other those coaches on that staff had recruited that young man since he was a freshman. Now they were at other places, but now they're at Tennessee. So that longevity, I think you're just going to see Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, more players signed. There actually were six signed if you count the two junior college players who were from Tennessee. I think something like 9 or 10 from Georgia. But the recruiting area, Georgia, Tennessee is, you have to recruit Tennessee. You got to sign players from, there's four states, Tennessee, Georgia, Western North Carolina, Heath Shuler, the Shulers, the Bryson, several great players have come out of there, and Florida. Those are the four you have to, that's got to be where you recruit from. Then you can go out and get a kid from Oregon or a kid from Michigan or somebody from New Jersey. But you have to, the great majority of your players have to come from those areas. And again, this staff knows those areas well. They did not know when they all got here, they did not know Tennessee very well. They did know Memphis, but they didn't know the rest of the state.
615-737-1045, our number if you'd like to jump in. Talking college football with Doug Matthews, who you can hear on the weekends right here on 104.5 The Zone. 9 to 11 every Saturday morning with Forklift Systems Football Saturday. 8 to 9 a.m. on Sunday morning is the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee athletics week to week with Big Orange Sunday. We go to Scott up on line one. First up today for Doug. What's up, Scott?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Coach Matthews. Hey, on Crouch, Pruitt actually announce his or talk about him if he wasn't a signee yet? And I'm just going to take your phone the answer off the air.
No, he cannot if he is not signed. No, any player that has not been signed cannot. They can't talk about him. You can talk about him in general, but you can't talk about the player. And you can get in trouble for that. Now, usually it's a handshake. It depends on what you do. If it's obvious that you're trying to recruit the young man, which most of them I think it would be. But no, anybody that's not signed, you can't. That's why on the national signing date, they wait till those faxes get in. I heard this year, I guess you could email this year, which is what a novel idea that is. But I guess you kept the, at least you had what 128 fax machines that were being sold to colleges at least. But nope, you have to gotta be really careful what you say on recruiting athletes at any point. And that's a good rule. It really is.
We go to Chris. What's up, Chris?
Oh, that much. I'd like for you to talk about Delonte Taylor and his role coming up from Tennessee, and just briefly give me your comments on how Arkansas has done in their recruiting this year, and I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you, Chris.
I don't think there's any doubt that Jeremy Pruitt, who happens to also be the cornerback coach and defensive coordinator, really likes three freshmen that he had this year. He likes the Trayvon Flowers youngster. He likes Alante Taylor. He likes Bryce Thompson. All three of those young men, if you look at them, they showed the excellent athletic ability to be able to play that position. They weren't anywhere physically near where they needed to be simply because they're just fresh out of high school. But those are three young men. I think you could also throw Theo Jackson in there, who was a sophomore. He was a quarterback in high school. Alante Taylor was a quarterback in high school. Not sure about Bryce Thompson or Flowers.
Very talented QBs, too.
And that means that they're, you know, if you play quarterback, normally you kind of see the field and have a good feel for it. I am very excited. Now, I don't get excited about it anymore, but I think that's an area that got better as the season went on. We saw what Bryce Thompson could do. Mistakes, certainly, but as the year went on, all three of them started tackling better. Flowers has hurt a good bit in there, but those three guys are going to be, I would think, three of the starters. If they're healthy, I don't see any way they won't be three of the starters next year in that five-man secondary.
Tony, next up. By the way, you can join us, 615-737-1045. Our number.
Arkansas, I really can't talk much about it because I didn't look at it, other than the fact that they did have a really good year, top 20 program. Remember that they're switching things over there. Yeah, Coach Morris is switching things around over from an offense and defensive standpoint, but they got back to recruiting Texas. That's why he was hired. He's a Texas high school coach, was. Certainly we know what he did when he was at Clemson and SMU, so good hire, I think. We'll see. But from a recruiting standpoint, they had a big uptick in their recruiting this year.
A couple of Tennessee players as well, or high school players to Arkansas. Let's go to Tony next. Hey, Tony.
Hey, I just find it hard to believe that you don't recruit Nashville and you let all these guys get out of Nashville. That's just bad recruiting to me. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Well, I don't know how many they've let get out of Nashville. There's certainly been some that have gone other places. And when I say Nashville, I'm talking about Middle Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Clarksville, all the different areas of, you know, Rutherford County, Wilson County, and Williams County. I won't get into any specific names, but they signed two young men from here, which we know about, Lampley and the Simmons youngster. Two offensive linemen. They certainly wanted, I think, one other player here. And I don't know that there were any other players that they really went after that hard. Again, that doesn't mean they're not going to be good players. I watched a young man play at CPA this year that signed with Clemson, Kane Patterson. Watched him last year and this year. Kane Patterson is a really, really quality football player, maybe an outstanding player. Hurt his knee last year, but certainly was an outstanding player. You know, probably didn't quite fit what Tennessee looked at, the defensive back over in Rutherford County. That wasn't what – he's a 5'10" guy. And that is not what – doesn't mean he was – hey, I was a 5'8" guy. You know, I'm glad I got to play the secondary for a while. But so, you know, it's just it didn't fit what they looked at and what they wanted, and they knew what they wanted, and if they weren't that particular – if they didn't meet those dimensions, again, unless they were a special player – you know, he wasn't going to recruit those young men. Doesn't mean that they're not going to be really good players. You can look. There's a bunch of really good players playing in the Southeastern Conference, not to mention other places that are excellent players that weren't highly recruited by this staff or other staffs. Doesn't mean they're wrong. Just means they felt like they were recruiting better players.
Well, and ultimately, if you feel like you're recruiting better players, you have a sense of development, of talent development, it projecting players out of high school for the college level as much as it is anything else. And, you know, a 4 or 5 star in high school needs to elevate. I've always looked at it, Doug, like if I were a coach and I brought in a 4-star athlete, and look, I understand the rankings, it is what you make them to be. But can you turn that 4-star into a 5-star by year 2 of your program? Can you bring in a 3-star and elevate him to an upper echelon type player, a 2-star? Can you make him a very quality role player? That's the challenge that Pruitt and his staff have that I don't think Jones and his staff did a very good job of. They did not develop the quality athletes that they brought in because they had a handful of big-time talent. People raved about some of those recruiting classes and individual players. They never turned in anything. It's time to develop that.
Well, I think that's fair criticism. Now, why those reasons were, there's different ways.
Yeah, I'm sure there's different examples.
But you know, here's the thing too. I don't know that I have the exact number. There were on this early signing day, there were less than 30. I think there were less than 25. But I'm going to give the number 25. 5-star players who actually signed. You know, that's one every 2 states in America. So that now. And you're right. The rating system has become much better because there's a lot of people doing it now, and they're getting help from universities.
Mm-hmm.
But you certainly need to be getting. I don't know about the. You know, there's only so many 5-stars out there. But you certainly, you know, if I think it's really fair and probably is something that is worth looking at. How many 4-stars and how many 3 stars. And if you look at those two, because that means they're pretty darn close, you know, and maybe, you know, there's always a reason. You only have so many 4-5 stars, I guess, is my point. So, you know, but there's a reason why if you look at Alabama and Clemson in particular, and I think you can throw Georgia in there and Ohio State, those four programs in particular, you know, they've been at the top of the rating system for the last 4, 5, 6, 8 years, and they're up there. So obviously that system is
rocking and rolling.
There's some quality to it. Absolutely.
And Doug, I mean, and I'm not saying anything you don't know and haven't known for a long time here, but Alabama and Clemson and everyone else, they're going to continue to get theirs. And Tennessee's going to have to out-coach. Right? I mean, you're going to have to bring in the talent
they're have to
and
recruit
develop.
I think one of the misconceptions is that, you know, like I've always said, listen, Alabama can only sign 25.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you give them the top 25 players in America, wherever they got to go, worldwide if you want to. Give me 3 or 4 or 5 of the next 100. You know, that doesn't mean, you know, there's programs that win out there. Oklahoma's a good example. Oklahoma, now, again, different league. Different style of ball. Oklahoma is not normally a top five. They didn't recruit anywhere, quote, but you look at what they've done, they've won a lot of ball games.
They're in the mix every year.
That's exactly right. So, but all you have to do is, and what these schools realize, and it's one of the reasons why, you know, I've talked about this for the last 10 years, and schools are catching up with it. If your head football coach is not the best recruiter on your staff, he's probably not going to be there very long. That's what Urban Meyer, that's what Georgia, Kirby Smart, he hadn't proven yet, but we've got a pretty good 3-year look at him. That's what Alabama under Nick Saban's done, you know, and that's what Clemson does. You know, that's what they do, Dabo Sweeney. They are great recruiters. Now, yeah, they do other things, but they are great recruiters. They have good recruiting staffs. But I can tell you from being an assistant, when you're going up against the best players in America, an assistant coach is not going to beat a head football coach when it comes down to recruiting. I don't care how good you are, what your reputation is, how close you are, that head football coach is going to recruit the best players over any assistants out there. So what does that mean? That means just your head football coach better be out there going head-to-head with him every day.
1045thezone.com, your home for The Zone online. Online. Read the Big Six blog. Register for contests. Find out when we'll be in your area. And catch up anything you might have missed with the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical podcast. Find out how to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Download our mobile app and listen online. You'll find everything you need to keep up with The Zone. All in one place. At 1045thezone.com.
Doug Matthews with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. So, Dan Flesser from the Knoxville News Sentinel had a piece last weekend, or maybe last Friday, that ran. The headline was, Philip Fulmer equates role as AD with Al Wilson's leadership for 1998 championship team. And he goes on to mention some really nice things in the piece about Wilson and what he meant 20 years ago to that overall team. But a part of it, Doug, reminded me of the story you told about going to Florida and having urine thrown in your direction. And while that's certainly not something that you would welcome, you like the fact that Florida hated Tennessee enough to try to do that to a fan that was in the stands, or a coach or a family member, anything like that. And Fulmer has a quote in here about, in 17 years as UT's coach, he had 152 victories. The 98 championship team, of course, completed a 4-year span where they were 45-5, and they won 2 SEC titles. And fans remember that. So whenever he's introduced as one of the SEC legends representing Tennessee, he is booed out of the building because fans remember him for that. And part of the quote was, our era was pretty impressive. There was a lot of conversation about that, and he wants football particularly to be back where it was. And I took that to mean be back to being booed, be back to being hated for actually visiting the town you're in on that particular Saturday. And it reminded me of the Florida visit that you had.
Well, remember this. He was the SEC legend representing Tennessee. They have won every national championship, or excuse me, SEC championship year. They have won. He was the one for this year, happened to be the athletic director. And he was also playing, the two teams we were playing were Georgia and Alabama, who he dominated. Well, now Florida, not even close, but those two teams he dominated. So that was the fan bases that were booing.
And he was introduced next to last, and he said, he told Greg Sankey, he goes, "I can feel this coming." And during the boos, Sankey leaned over to him and said, "You've left an impression."
Well, and of course, I think next last because they went in alphabetical
order. Right, sure,
I think.
Sure.
But here's the other thing on that. But listen, make no mistake about this. I have a lot of I have several quality Alabama friends that went to school there, in some instances played there.
Mm-hmm.
But make no mistake about this. The reason they don't like Philip Fulmer is twofold. Number one, he's got 11-5 record against them in 16 years. And number two, he, along with two other national championship head coaches, turned in Mike DeBose when Mike DeBose was admittedly cheating by the athletic director at that time. Now, they can rewrite this any way they want to rewrite. The athletic director at Tennessee, at Alabama, Mal Moore, former national championship player, former national championship assistant coach, agreed to all this because he knew what had been happening. They got that cleaned up there. But listen, the other two guys, I have people come up to me once a month or two, say, "Hey, your old buddy, you know, turned us in." I said, "Well, yeah, he was one of them. But you know who else? There were two other coaches that were right in the middle of that. Steve Spurrier at Florida and the head coach at LSU at the time was right there with Fulmer, turning him in. Got him Nick Saban. They kind of forget about
they do.
That. You know, they kind of forget about that. So, bottom line is, they, you know, if you get caught, yeah, I'm not saying that people aren't out there cheating. If you get caught, you're probably going to get hammered pretty good, and you might as well just do what Mal Moore did. Accept it. Let's move on and look what they've rebuilt now. They got a pretty good program running down there right now.
What do you think about him?
Let me say one thing about what Philip was saying, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is what this is one reason he won the athletic director job. Now, had him on Sunday. Anybody listen to that, if you listen to the podcast on that, I think you'll get some interesting things out of it. He is going to, it's the whole athletic program him. It's not just the football program, but he knows and everybody else knows that you got to get the football program well if you're going to keep the other ones going in some instances well or even get better. But he is so invested in former players. He had two daughters who were Lady Vols. All those years of his playing and assisting and then head coach, getting people back involved. And, of course, Al Wilson's one of the anybody that knows anything about Tennessee's program, Al Wilson was happened to be a great player, but a quality leader. And that's what he's talking about. And, you know, he's, as he said one time, you know, "I'm tired of us going on the road to Florida and other places and being homecoming."
Right.
You know, where you come in, they pat you on the back and say, "Hey, have a safe trip back."
Treated like a win.
Yeah, I'd much rather you throw stuff at us and cuss us and want to fight us when we're walking off the field and patting us on the back and saying, have a nice trip back to Knoxville.
And one of the quotes he said in this piece, and again, this is from Dan Flasser of Knoxville News Sentinel. He told Dan that era, there was a clear chain of command. And it wasn't just athletic director to head coach to staff. It was athletic director, head coach, staff, players. And they put a lot of leadership qualities into the top leaders of the team. Where they set up Al Wilson to go up in front of the team and act like he accepted payment from either an agent or some other form of income. And they were going to have to turn in their SEC championship rings because of it. And so they put Wilson in front of the team, and he really got into the acting role. And then at the end, broke character and said, "I'm just joking. But look, one wrong decision by any one of you can put us in this situation." And he was saying, "Look, a lot of the times it's the kids in the locker room, not as much as it is the coaches or the AD." And he wants to be the facilitator for the chain of command, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that he's meeting with the coaches about. And, you know, one quick thing on that. there's a lot of people that don't agree with me on this. I'm just giving my opinion on this. I'll tell you this. I know this about Tennessee. Tennessee's never won a football championship where you didn't have an athletic director that had been a former head coach or former coach. Not a football championship. Hadn't won any. Go back as far as you want to go. Now, I guess you go back to 1926 or 7. Maybe Neyland won the athletic director at that point. Maybe he was. But I think it makes a difference. You know, an athletic director, we've let this thing kind of morph, and I say we in the athletic world, where you talk about, boy, you got to have this, you got to have that. You got to have, to be a good athletic director, what's the two main things you got to do? You got to hire coaches, you got to support, nurture, and in some instances, make changes in coaches. You got to be able to work with coaches. Now, who could do that better, or who can do it any better than someone that has been a coach and has been a head coach? And of course, I can't talk about Tennessee and Phillip without mentioning Doug Dickey. He knew what Doug Dickey did for him for 16 years and watched what he did with John Majors for 7 or 8 years. Before that, Bob Woodruff, another former head coach in this league and played at Tennessee. So Dickey didn't play at Tennessee, but Dickey was a Tennessee guy during that period. And, you know, it makes a difference. And, you know, people can throw out little theories about you need to do this, you need to do that, you know, need to have somebody that knows about economics. And I kind of say it like this, John, it's kind of like a pastor at your church. You know, it's hard to get a guy that's great from the pulpit, does a great job in weddings, great job counseling, you know, couples that are having marital problems, get great at going to the hospital and visiting. Ain't many of them out there, you know. So what's the most important thing? Well, pick whatever he is. In me, I want a pulpit pastor. When I go, I want to hear somebody that I can walk up and say, boy, I got something out of that. And an athletic director, I want a guy that can work, can hire coaches, and can work with coaches. I can hire people that tell me, hey, coach, you only got $35 million left in your budget. So, you know, I can hire people to tell me what to do that. I can hire people to tell me how to work with other things. I want a guy that's going to hire coaches, work and nurture coaches and help them and support them and help them get better. And that is, there's nobody in the Southeastern Conference has a better guy than that right now as an athletic director.
Doug, let's quickly run through a couple of the games coming up across the SEC, starting tomorrow night with Vanderbilt and Baylor in the Texas Bowl down in Houston. Whenever this game was announced, I mentioned I thought it could be one of the more competitive games on the bowl schedule. Both teams want to win. They want that winning season. And it's a bowl game where I think both programs are pleased to be in the position they're in this year. It's not where it's not a deflating feeling for one of the programs where they didn't maximize where they were.
The toughest thing about bowl games, now, the semifinal games and the major bowl games, all right, those six, including the two semifinals, those six major games, Sugar, Orange, you know, Rose, mm-hmm. all those, that's different. Set them over here. But the other bowl games, it's all in how that head football coach decides that he wants to approach the game. Some say, hey, I want to get another win, you know, we need another win. Others say, you know what, these guys have bust their face. This game doesn't mean anything. When, you know, so you get another win, it doesn't mean anything. Let's take this more as a reward. Now, that doesn't mean you don't go practice, but, you know, instead of going a 2.5-hour practice, you do an hour and a half or an hour. And I was on both sides of that. You know, when we played in East Tennessee, we played Sugar Bowl, we played the Cotton Bowl, big bowls back then, but both of them still are. You know, it was a different practice schedule, but the head football coach, he didn't have to say anything about it. We kind of knew on that. So that's why I don't put a whole lot of stock in some of these bowl games, because you just don't know how they prepared or how they're approaching the game. And I say they, the head football coach. That's why you see a lot of underdogs, quote, win in these games, because, you know, Central Florida is, you know, last year against Auburn is a good example. You know, they were sky high. Auburn was probably down a little bit. Now, that's not an excuse for getting beat. They got beat pretty good. So what's going to happen with the LSU game? But the one you just talked about, I think, is a good example. Both these programs, very similar in some regards. Private schools, for a while, were really the whipping children of the of the conference they were in. And yep. Both of them have raised that profile. Baylor now is trying to come back from some really bad things that happened down there. And again, I think Coach Mason does as good a job coaching a team as anybody in this conference. Doesn't mean he's the top coach, not saying that, but you know, anybody, bring anybody in here, and if you can go 6-6 at Vanderbilt with a schedule that they have to play, that's pretty darn good. Particularly this year when you got Notre Dame on there, you played what, two of the? I think they ended up playing. I think they ended up playing six teams. I think five at least that were in the college football playoff final top 25. So they played some good teams this year and beat some good teams this year.
So let's roll through a few of these. Give me your initial thoughts on the matchup. So Vandy and Baylor tomorrow, 8 p.m. ESPN. Friday, Music City Bowl, Auburn, Purdue. That game's at 12:30. You like that game?
Well, I do like it, but I think that I'm going to go, you know, Auburn's a better program, got better team, but Purdue, I think, probably maybe has a little bit more to prove, maybe. How's Auburn going to – no way Auburn's going to come in here playing like it's a national championship game. We've seen that, you know, happen often here. I think it will be a very, very good game. And listen, Purdue's got some players now, the skilled players, that can watch number four in that ball game. We saw what they could do against Ohio State. So I think it'll be a good ball game, yeah.
Florida and Michigan on Saturday.
I think Florida's got a bunch of problems. You know, they opened up a season ago and got worn out down in Gainesville.
Mm. Yes.
Michigan's much better on defense than Florida. I think it's going to be not an easy win, but a pretty significant scoring advantage for particularly on the defensive side of the ball.
Wolverines.
For the Wolverines, yeah.
South Carolina and Virginia playing in Charlotte.
Yeah, I like South Carolina in that game. Virginia is a good, solid team. I like South Carolina in that game. I think that's one where Tennessee, you look at the Tennessee-South Carolina game. Tennessee was a similar type team to what Virginia was if you watch them play this year. And that game was a very close game, Tennessee-South Carolina. I anticipate it'll be a much of a game like that.
And let's get to the college football playoff semis. Clemson, Notre Dame, 3:00 ESPN on Saturday. That game played in Dallas.
How have you prepared? I think all four of these coaches are experienced coaches. They're all experienced coaches, with the exception of Oklahoma. And I don't know, maybe being inexperienced might help them because they're going to have to score 50 points, I would think, to win that game. But this particular game, you have to like Clemson. But the thing at Notre Dame is they'll keep the game close. They play solid, solid defense. Their quarterback is a guy that can beat you. He's not a spectacular player, but can beat you. And I tell you the thing about Notre Dame. You know, I don't care if it's in the 40s, 50s, 60s. This appears to me to be one of those Notre Dame teams that they know that tradition at Notre Dame. They know it's been 1988 since they've won a national championship. That is a long period of time, and I think Notre Dame's going to play much better than Clemson. And the thing that would worry me about Clemson is this: of all the quarterbacks, the four quarterbacks, they got a freshman. Now he is talented. They build around him. He's played in some big ball games, but he's not played in the pressure like this one that he's going to be facing Saturday. So, you know, I don't like picking ball games, but it would not surprise me. Well, they're the best four teams in the country, so you know any of them could win.
You're saying don't overlook Notre Dame.
No, I like Notre Dame. I like their overall football team, and I really like Coach Kelly. I really do.
So that's 3:00 on Saturday, and then 7:00 in Miami, Hard Rock Stadium, Alabama, Oklahoma.
If Alabama plays well. If Alabama, I don't think Alabama can lose. I don't think Oklahoma can win. I think Alabama could lose, but I don't think they will. And this is the big difference. If you look at the lines of scrimmage, really everything, but the quarterbacks aren't a whole lot of difference in there. You had top two Heisman Trophy guys. Yeah. Receivers are about the same. You know, Oklahoma's got some skilled receivers. Alabama's so much better in the offensive line. So much better in the defensive line. So much better in the second defense. I mean, it's not even close, and Alabama's running game, I think, is going to give Oklahoma a lot of problems. And talk about a guy that knows how to coach in these games. Nobody knows better than how to play a game and coach a game like this than Nick Saban does. And I would just guess. And I watch a lot of Oklahoma. That's my home team and I follow. I don't know how they're going to slow them down running. Now, if fumbling the football and the only chance that Oklahoma has, you know, defensively is to load up on that run because they're going to get a big dose of running game now. But when you do that, they got those three or four receivers, including their tight end. You give them that man coverage all over the field, the way that Tua throws that football, they're impressive. I don't know if this is the best Alabama team. They've had so many, but I know this is the best quarterback that they've had and wide receiver corps throwing the ball down the field. And it's a throw the ball down the field type of game now.
Doug, give us the latest on the offensive coordinator and the impending hire that no doubt Pruitt and Fulmer will be making. And you've said this is Jeremy Pruitt's hire. They don't have early signing period to worry about anymore. So my guess is that happens over the next week and a half.
I didn't ask head coach Fulmer on for 30 minutes Sunday. Didn't bring up an uninterrupted 30 minutes. Didn't ask about the offensive coordinator for couple of reasons. As I mentioned starting the show, I'm not going to ask him something he's not going to answer, and right. I'm not going to ask him something that the head coach should be answering. This is Jeremy Pruitt's hire. Would the athletic director veto something that was bad for the university? Sure he would, but I don't think the head football coach would propose a guy that was bad for the university. Here's what I would look at for if I was a Tennessee fans. And I think everybody knows there's been enough about what I have said in the past. you can take it any way you want to take
right.
it. I am confident from what I've been told in the past that Tennessee knows who they're going to hire. Here's what I would look for, and this is what I'm not so sure about. But I believe, or let me put it, there's a difference. My opinion is that he is going to do something with Chris Winkie. I have no doubt. I don't know. I have an idea who the new coach is going to be. I don't know that it's going to be a quarterback coach because I contend this. He brought Chris Winkie in to coach running backs when he had an outstanding running back coach in Robert Gillespie, but he wanted Chris Winkie on his staff. My belief is, haven't been told this by anybody, but just knowing how head coaches work, I believe that he brought him in there. So if things did not work out well with Tyson Helton, and I'm not saying they did or they didn't. Some people think, well, he fired. I don't know if he did or not. He may ask him to leave. He may not. May let it happen. I don't know. But I know this. He didn't bring Chris Winkie in to coach running backs at Tennessee. Didn't do that. He could have brought a lot of people in to coach that position, younger guys. He brought him in, and I just wouldn't be surprised if when it's all said and done, if Chris Winkie wasn't the quarterback coach. Chris Winkie's not going to be the coordinator, don't get me wrong. But it would not surprise me if he wasn't the quarterback coach. Pruitt knows him. He started IMG, the recruiting part of it. He was an analyst at Alabama when Coach Pruitt was there. He brought him in for a reason. I may be all wet on this thing, but I would not be surprised when it's all said and done if Chris Winkie wasn't the quarterback coach. I don't believe he'll be I'm sure he won't be the coordinator.
That
means they could bring in a lot of other things on that. And again, I still believe that they know who they're going to hire, and I think they've known who they're going to hire. And I think anybody that said that they're just now starting the process, they probably misspoke. Maybe they restarted it. It was put on the back burner. He said very clearly he wants to get recruiting out of the way. And who he brought in, who he will eventually bring in, obviously is not going to have any effect on recruiting.
That's right. And by moving Winkie, if they do that, that could allow the new coordinator to bring in someone with him.
I don't think that'll happen.
Okay.
No, there'll only be one position open.
Okay.
They only have one spot open. I've been on both sides of this. I've seen when David Cutcliffe came back, Philip Fulmer let him bring two coaches in with him. One of them's the head coach down at Ole Miss right now. When you do that, and this guy not going to do that because you know what? When David Cutcliffe left, what happened? He took those two guys with him. He's not going to let anybody come in and hire a coach. He's going to. If there's one thing I feel strongly about this head football coach, he's going to hire everybody up there. So there won't be bringing anybody in. He's going to bring a guy in that's going to do what he wants him to do. Now, he'll have some leeway on how to do it, but he's going to do what he wants him to do.
Doug, Happy New Year to you. Thank you for another great year with us, and we look forward to next week.
Yeah.
Right here.
We'll have two big ball games. These are two really, you know, the playoffs, I know we got to get out of here, but how well has this 14 playoff worked?
Been so great, I'd love an 18 playoff.
Well, I don't want an 18 playoff.
Make everybody money, and I'll enjoy the big games again.
In my generation, less is more. You're one of those more.
Yeah, give me more big games like that. I'll take it. Hey, Doug, thank you.
You bet.
A big thanks to the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive and helping Doug be in studio with us each and every week.